Anytime you meet with a seller, you have to ask this one question. The answer that he or she gives to this question is going to be fundamental in determining if this practice is worth buying. There are going to be six different categories of answers that you're likely to receive from the seller. Today, we're going to look at all six of those possible responses, and we're going to rank them from best to worst. So make sure you stick around for answers 5 and 6, because if you get either of these two answers, that is a big red flag, and you might need to reconsider if this practice is worth buying. My name is Chris. I'm a dentist. I have bought and sold practices, so I know what it's like to be on both sides of the deal. So let's get started. So what is the question that you're going to want to ask the seller? It's a question you probably are going to ask without even thinking about it, but you need to be very careful in listening to how the seller answers this question, because it's going to be hard to ask it a second time. The question is simply, why are you selling your dental practice? It's a simple question, but the answer is fundamental to determining if this practice is going to be worth buying. Now, the first answer, and one of the more common answers, is I'm retiring. This is one of the best answers you can hear, because it's possible that the dental practice had been extremely successful, but this dentist is just getting older and he or she is ready to retire. Now, just because a dentist says they're retiring, you still want to make sure that they are going to sign a non-compete agreement when you buy the practice. I know a dentist who sold his practice when he was in his 70s. I'm sure the buyer thought, well, there's no way this dentist is ever going to go back to work. He's 70, he's done. But then, I'm not kidding you, he bought another practice. The 70-year-old dentist bought another practice, and when I met this dentist, he was like 95 years old and he was still practicing. He sold his first practice when he was 70 years old, and then he still bought another practice and worked another 25 years. So even if a dentist says, hey, I'm retiring, you don't have to worry about me, you know, you just need to be careful that you sign a non-compete agreement, because what you don't want is for that dentist to go across the street, open up another practice, and then all the patients that you just paid a lot of money for have now gone across the street to the other dentist. The other big risk is, even if the selling dentist doesn't buy or start a new practice, it's possible that he could just go to another dentist in town and work as an associate. This is actually a pretty common thing to happen, where a dentist will sell his practice and then he'll go and he'll work part-time as an associate at another office. But that's risky, because he could bring a lot of patients with him when he goes over to that other office. So you need to be very clear when you sign that asset purchase agreement that there is a section that this dentist agrees that he will not practice within a certain distance for a certain time period. Now, that distance is going to change based on whether you're in a city or you're in more of a country type area. In a city where patients are mostly walking and taking public transportation, the radius is going to be a lot smaller, because patients are generally looking for something that's pretty close to their house. But if you're in a more rural area, it's not uncommon for patients to drive 20, 30 miles to go to the dentist. So in a city, you might be fine with a 10-mile non-compete. But in a rural area, you might need something like a 200-mile non-compete. For time, 5 years is a pretty standard number. I've seen some do 10 years. I've seen some sellers try to request 2 years. I don't know if 2 years is enough time. I would shoot for that 5 range. That's ideal. But I wouldn't just make a non-compete and assume that you're going to be fine, because in real life, how are you actually going to defend this non-compete agreement? If it ends up being a big problem, you hire a lawyer and you sue this dentist and you go through this big process, but you don't want to have to go through all that trouble and expense of hiring a lawyer and suing. Try to determine if this dentist is really retiring. What are his plans after he retires? Does he or she have a vacation home that they're going to be spending a lot of time at? Does it look like they have a life that's set up? Are they financially stable? Does it seem like he or she has the money to where when they retire, they're not going to have to work again? If someone's selling and they seem like they're desperate for the money, that's kind of a red flag, because they might have to go get another job. And if they are established in this town, they have family there, their kids live in that town, everyone they know lives in that town, they're probably not going to want to move. And so they're probably going to end up either becoming an associate at another office or opening up a new practice or buying a practice. And they might break their non-compete and say, hey, well, I'm sorry, but I need the money. And then it's going to be your decision if you're going to sue them or not. And do you really want to have to sue another dentist? Because that doesn't look good. And it's also going to be a stressful situation. So try to make sure the dentist is actually retiring, and do everything you can to investigate and to make sure that it seems like they're actually going to be retiring. All right, the second response to the question of why are you selling your practice is going to be, health issues. Sometimes a dentist will be selling their practice because they have a certain health condition or health issue. I recently helped out at an office just temporarily because the dentist had a stroke. At the time, I was not looking to buy another practice, so while they offered to sell me the practice, I didn't buy it. I did help out for a few days during that transition and saw some of the patients of the practice. You know, it's really sad. He wasn't even that old. You might come across a practice where the dentist was only 40, 50 years old, and they've had a stroke, they've had a heart attack, maybe they got into a car wreck, maybe they recently got diagnosed with some sort of terminal cancer. This is real life. You're going to come across these types of things. So of course, you want to be very respectful and kind when you hear the dentist tell you that they have some sort of health condition. However, you still want to kind of investigate it a little bit, because maybe they did have cancer, but a lot of people have cancer and then fully recover. So let's say this dentist is selling their practice because they have cancer. What happens when they recover? Are they going to want to start a new practice right across the street? I wouldn't just take the first thing they say as, oh, they have a health condition, therefore this is a good practice to buy. You still want to investigate. You still want to kind of see, well, how bad is this condition? How old are they? Were they nearing retirement anyways, and this is just what kind of fueled on their retirement? Or is this someone who's 40 years old and likely they're going to recover and then they're going to be right back in the game? So you want to be careful with this one. Now, in addition to health concerns like cancer and strokes and car wrecks, there's also a big health concern, and that's the biggest health concern, and that's death. You will come across practices where the dentist has died, whether it be through they got into a car accident, they had a heart attack, or suicide. It's not that uncommon for dentists to commit suicide. Now, kind of an initial thought is, well, if the dentist is dead, how are you buying the practice from them? The dentist probably had family, and so the practice has now passed on to that family, and chances are that dentist's wife or children, whoever is now managing the estate, they're probably not a dentist. So there's a chance that this practice, where the dentist has passed away for whatever reason, is now no longer having a dentist seeing the patients in that practice. So these types of deals, you want to move swiftly and quickly, because when the patients hear that the dentist has died, there's a huge chance that they're going to say, well, I guess I'm going to move on to the next practice, and those patients are going to atrophy pretty quickly. I recently had someone ask me, what is the percentage discounted per time period after the dentist has died due to patients leaving? I like that thought process. That's a good way to think about it. And I'm sure there's some people who will tell you, well, 10% per week or 15% per month or whatever. There's no hard and fast rule with this. Every situation is going to be a case-by-case basis. I actually am aware of a situation where the dentist daughter was still working in the practice as a hygienist after the dentist passed away. I'm not saying I agree or support that, but it was happening. And so a lot of the patients actually stayed because they were still coming in for their hygiene appointments. With these types of practices, you're going to want to move quickly, and you're going to want to do as much research as you can in a short amount of time. I would recommend trying to find out some sort of way to call and confirm patients before you even buy the practice. See if you can get the office manager at that practice to call the patients that had missed their appointments due to the office being closed and have them rescheduled. And so when you come in, every patient that was going to be seen has already been rescheduled. And when you get there, you're going to have a lot of work to do. That's going to be your best situation. Now, the worst case scenario is you come in and all the patients are gone. They haven't been rescheduled. You didn't even talk to the office manager of this practice before you took over. In these death type situations, even before you have purchased the practice, you want to already step in and start getting to work. Yeah, you're going to be doing some free work for this practice, talking to the office manager and the hygienist or whatever, and telling them, hey, you need to start calling these patients. You need to start making these appointments. It's going to take a little bit of your time. And if someone else buys it, that's fine, but you want to make sure that the patients are getting called, and the wife or the children of this spouse who has just passed away, they might be still grieving and they might not be thinking logically about some of these types of things. So you want to be the person who comes in and thinks logically, and you're clear in what you want to do. And you come in saying that, hey, I'm going to take this practice over. I'll take care of this for you. I know it's a big deal. They've probably reached out to a practice broker. You're probably going to end up doing a lot more communication with the practice broker in this situation, because the family members they're not going to want to deal with this. Try to get an idea of if there are a lot of other dentists that are interested in this practice, or if it's just you. If there are multiple other dentists that are interested in it, then you might just want to pay the price that they're asking so that you can get started right away. If there's not that many other dentists that are interested right now, maybe you're in a smaller town, maybe you're in a more rural area, you might have a little bit more negotiating power in this situation. But there's still going to be goodwill you have to worry about with the practice's spouse or children, because it's possible that the dentist's spouse was pretty involved in some of these patients' lives, and she's going to be saying, oh, this dentist was great. He came in and he took over this practice at the perfect time. Or she might say, oh, this dentist is terrible. He came in and he was trying to negotiate every little thing, and he's robbed us in our time of need. So you want to make sure you are very careful in these types of situations. The third response to the question of why are you selling your practice might be that the dentist is moving. Make sure you ask, where are you moving to? How far away is it? Why are you moving? If they're moving because their spouse has gotten enrolled in a new school program that's going to last 4 years, well, then that's a pretty good reason. If they say they're moving, they won't tell you where they're moving, or they say, well, we haven't decided yet, etc. And especially if they're not that old and they say this, that's a big red flag. You want to make sure that they're not just saying, I'm moving, because it's actually a bad practice that they're trying to escape from. You want to figure out why they're moving, and does this reason actually make sense? So the first practice that I was the owner of, I actually sold fairly recently after I purchased it because I was moving. We were having our first child, and we decided it was best to move so we'd be closer to the grandparents. Overall, in our life, it just made sense to move at that time. And so luckily, I was able to sell the practice and it wasn't a big deal. So you might come across a practice like that where the practice is actually running just fine. The dentist just, for whatever reason, they decide it's time to move. People move. The great thing is, when you own a dental practice and you move, you have the potential to sell that practice for more than you paid for it. Or maybe you sell it for the same that you paid for it, but if you've owned the practice for 5-10 years, maybe you've already paid off the practice loan, and then you're going to get that money back, that equity you're going to be getting when you sell the practice. So if they say they're moving, just kind of dig deeper and see if they're really moving or if they're just using this as an excuse to not really answer your question. All right, now we're going to get to the second half of possible answers to the question of why are you selling your dental practice. These three answers are starting to get into territory of it's a little bit questionable. So answer number four is going to be something along the lines of, I'm burnt out, or I have a desire to change my career. For instance, I know a dentist who moved to Hollywood because he wants to try to be an actor. Is he going to be successful? Probably not, but he wants to do it. The reality is, not everyone wants to be a dentist. Some people do it for a while and realize, hey, actually, I don't really want to do this right now, and I'm going to try something else. That's fine. Life is short. If you want to try some other things, you should. Just because you've bought a practice and you've gone to dental school does not mean that you have to be a dentist every single year of your life following. If someone wants to sell their practice and go try something else for a while, that's perfectly acceptable. And actually, it's pretty common in dentistry for people to do these types of things, because as a dentist, you can make so much money. You can be in a situation where as a practice owner, you might be making $600,000 a year. But if you're only spending $100,000 to $150,000 a year, you might have a few million saved up. You could sell your practice and go 5-10 years without working and focus on some other things for a while and still have plenty of money to do what you want to do. So it's really not that uncommon for dentists to decide they're going to try a different path for a while. Oftentimes, they're going to end up coming back eventually, because how are you going to find another job that pays like dentistry? You're not. But the main thing for this, the main thing you're going to be looking for with this response is very similar to the moving response, is if they say they're changing careers or something, try to get some more details. And if they're not really sure, then you should be a little bit hesitant, because there's a high probability that they're going to say, oh, well, I guess I'm going back into dentistry 6 months later. And then there they are starting a new practice right across the street. Try as your best to understand the whole situation. Is it possible that they've had such a bad experience at this practice that it's resulted in them deciding they don't even want to be a dentist anymore? If that's the case, you might want to look at the practice and say, hey, maybe this practice isn't worth buying. Maybe there's something about this practice that's so bad that it literally ruined this dentist's career. Be careful. You don't want to buy a practice like that. So just do your best to try to understand the situation and then move from there. All right, we're coming down to the final two answers. Number five is, I have another practice and blah, blah, blah. If they have another practice and they're selling this practice, that is a huge red flag. Now, I'm not saying you should never buy a practice that's a second or third practice from someone selling, but it raises a lot of questions, and you're going to have to do a lot more work on a practice like this to make sure it is one that you want to buy. If the dentist has multiple practices and this is the one they're deciding to sell, it likely means that there's some sort of problem with it. Best case scenario, maybe it's too far of a drive for them and they want to sell it. But if they're the type of dentist that has multiple practices, why don't they have an associate working at this practice? One common scenario that I've seen is you'll have a dentist, he has a main practice in kind of the central hub in a city somewhere, and then he buys a satellite practice that's kind of on the outskirts of the city, and it's his idea that he's going to run his main practice and he's going to hire an associate to work in that second practice. But most dentists who try this strategy find out, actually, it's not even worth it to have this second practice because it's a pain in the butt to have to deal with these associates, and you end up not making nearly as much money as you thought. And while at your main office, because you're there and you're running it, you're able to make sure things are running efficiently and running well. At the second office, if you don't have the systems built up to run a multi-office practice, then you don't know what's going on over there. Things are falling apart, and now you're stressed out because you're driving back and forth between these two practices. Maybe you have an associate leave, you have a hard time filling that practice with an associate, and now you have to split your time between two practices, and it's like, well, why don't I spend full time working at your one practice? So I'm not saying you should never buy a practice like this, but I am saying you need to be extremely careful. How far away is the dentist's other practice? Are the patients just going to leave from this one office and follow to the other office? You can go into the practice management software and export a list of patients by zip code and get an idea of where the patients are located. Try to get an idea of, for the average patient, how far are they going to have to drive if they want to visit this dentist at his other practice. Regardless though, either way you look at it, if a dentist is selling his second practice like this, it should be discounted more than if this was a primary practice. If this practice was so amazing and so profitable, why would they be selling it? Now, sometimes, and hopefully in this case, this is what's happened, the dentist is just so profitable at his other practice and he wants to spend his time doing other things. He hasn't had the time to build and invest and grow the second practice. And so now if you come in and you actually put the time and energy into growing it, this is the kind of practice that you're going to be able to grow. Sometimes these second type of practices, I mean, they can actually be pretty nice practices because it was the second office of a dentist who already had another successful practice, it's possible that they had the money to buy nice equipment and they've been keeping things in top shape. So you might be able to find a pretty nice working office location by doing this strategy. So I'm not saying never buy a practice like this. I'm just saying you need to realize it's a red flag and be very careful. And you're going to need to spend some extra time doing your due diligence and asking questions about this type of practice. Now, when you're initially looking at practices, there are three key pieces of information, three key documents that you're going to want to look at. I have compiled all that information into a free PDF that I will put down in the description. Make sure you check out that practice evaluation checklist because that's going to be an invaluable resource. When you're looking at practices, you can go back and reference this checklist to see, oh, what are the documents that I need and what are the things I'm looking for on these documents? That's what that checklist is going to help you with. So make sure you download that checklist. You can find it at practiceown.com/PDF. That's practiceown.com/PDF. All right, now we're going to get into the sixth reason that a dentist might be selling their practice. And this is an answer that the dentist is probably not going to say. They are probably going to give you one of the other answers when they're actually masking this answer. The final reason a dentist is going to sell their practice is because the practice is failing. The vast majority of dental practices are successful. Overall in the United States, there are a shortage of dentists relative to the number of patients that want to be seen. So if you come across a practice that is failing for some reason, that's something to worry about. It is really hard to fail at dentistry. The obvious thing you're going to need to look at is, why is this practice failing? Just because a practice is failing doesn't mean you shouldn't buy it. You might have the opportunity to buy a really nice practice that just needs to be managed better. It's possible that the seller, while he might not tell you this right away, maybe he has a drinking problem, a drug problem, maybe he's been having marriage difficulties, maybe the dentist is having mental health issues and is going through some sort of crisis right now. So you're going to have to look at these practices on a case-by-case basis, and you're going to have to look extremely hard at all of the numbers and all the details. You're going to want to talk to employees. Ideally, you try to talk to some patients that have gone to that practice. You want to try to talk to other dentists in the area. area and kind of figure out what's going on with this place. It's possible that the dentist that was there before you was just not a good dentist. And if you come in as a good dentist and actually do the work and do a good job, you could grow this practice big time. But it's also possible that maybe the practice is just in a terrible location. Maybe the demographics for that area are just really bad. When you do a startup, it's super important to make sure you're doing demographic research for the area where you're doing the startup. When you buy a practice, it's generally not as important as when you do a startup. You already know this practice is successful because you can go back and you can look at the last few years, the production reports, and you can see how successful this practice has been. But if you're going to consider taking over some sort of failing practice, you want to treat it almost like it's a startup. You're going to want to do demographic research and see what is the area like. Is it overly saturated with dentists? If you're buying a practice in a city that you grew up in, you've lived in a long time, you're going to have a good idea of what neighborhoods are nice and which ones aren't. But if you're buying a practice in a brand new city or a brand new location, you need to be careful because you don't want to buy a practice that's in a terrible part of town. I know in the city I live, there's an interstate that runs through the city. And on one side of the interstate is where all the nice businesses are. And when you cross over to the other side, there's an area of town which is really bad. On first glance, you might look at two practices and see, well, they're only half a mile apart, and this one's extremely successful. So why isn't this other practice successful? Well, maybe the successful practice is in the nice area of town, and you're looking at a practice that's in a really bad area of town. If you come across a practice that is not as successful as you think it should be, you need to ask the question of why. Is the practice doing poorly because it's a bad practice, or is the practice doing poorly because the previous dentist was a bad dentist? Obviously, you're not going to be able to directly ask the seller that question. So this is the type of practice where you're going to have to do a lot of research before even considering buying it. You need to make sure that you have a plan in place for how you are going to grow and transform this failing practice. For most dentists, in most cases, I don't even recommend looking at these types of practices. It's best to just find a practice that's already successful. But if this is what you got and you've been looking for a long time and you have to live in a certain area and this is the only one you can find, you can make it work. It's probably going to be better than doing a startup, but you just need to be very careful. All right, so those are the six categories of responses that you can get from a seller when you ask, why are you selling your practice? Make sure to check out that free practice evaluation worksheet. If you have any questions about a practice that you would like me to take a look at, feel free to send me an email at chris@practiceown.com. Visit our website. We have a service where we help dentists evaluate practices and then help them through the purchase process. If you're interested, make sure to reach out. We'd love to work with you. It's exciting that you're looking at becoming an owner. It's likely going to be one of the biggest and most profitable decisions that you're ever going to make in your life. So don't sleep on this. Get started today and become a practice owner.